Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
We are back for Season 3 and it's going to be a good one.
With the aim of raising the profile of British distance running, we're bringing you more content than ever.
Every week, we'll give you insights into the lives and training of some of the UK's top athletes and coaches,
as well as all the latest updates from the races up and down the country and around the world.
You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast streaming platforms.
Keep a lookout for our new YouTube channel too, where we're posting workout videos, shoe reviews, and much more.
Stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
And if you want to drop us a line, send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the episode. For this week's episode, we welcome 6031 half marathon man Jake Smith back to the podcast. We first spoke to Jake back in March 2021 for episode 20, and so it's great to get him back on. He's now signed by the NN running team with PBs of 13:38 and 28:01 over 5K and 10K, and Jake's one of the UK's biggest distance running prospects in the marathon. Unfortunately, Jake has recently had some issues with Red S, and these have impacted negatively upon his running and his everyday life. We hope this episode can help to spread some awareness around a major issue within our sport, and please check the link in the description for a link to some more information about Red S. Enjoy. Okay, Jake, firstly, welcome back to the podcast. Great to have you back on. Obviously, last time we spoke to you, we were just saying off air, it was the day after the UPACE Olympic Marathon Trials, and obviously loads has gone on since then. You all right, though?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Back in Seaton, Devon with my parents. So it's quite a nice day today. So hopefully it stays like that from now.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think obviously one thing about you is that you've never been kind of shy to share what you're up to on your social media, on your Strava, things like that. And obviously, I'm sure a lot of people have seen recently you kind of announced that you've had some injuries and like some issues recently. But obviously, we're going to chat through that today, but also some of the really good performances you've had in the past couple of years since we last spoke to you. So can we just start with the I think when we last spoke to you, we sort of said, were you tempted to finish the marathon trials? And then I think a couple of weeks later, you obviously went and did finish a marathon after pacing. So do you remember that day? You're kind of your 2:11.
Yeah, it was quite funny because I remember I keep saying to people, because I was supposed to stop at 15 miles, and my mum was there like almost supporting me. And I remember like going around, and because it's quite easy, because it's a loop course, you're not thinking about how many miles left. You're almost thinking, okay, you have two laps left, one lap left, whatever. And the guys I was pacing, they kept telling me, oh, do one more lap, one more lap, one more lap. And by the time it got to 20 miles, I was like, oh, sod this. I haven't come this far to just get absolutely knackered and not get anything from it. So the last lap, I remember asking organizers, am I allowed to finish the race? And as soon as they said yes, I was like, I've done all the work for the guy behind me. I'm getting this time. So I just put my head down and went for it. And I promise you, I did not think about finishing it before the race, but at about 20 miles at that point, I was like, no, I'm getting this time.
Mate, and that kind of started the whole, I guess, pacemaker, especially after London as well, that kind of your role as a pacemaker. Talk about that as a role. And was it something you wanted to be known as at that period of time?
Yeah, I think because I'm getting to an age now where I do want to step up to the marathon, do want to do the longer stuff. This pacing just gives you like an idea of how it feels to be part of a group, taking the gels, taking the bottles and everything. And it's given me so much experience. So I've been pacing Rotterdam Marathon, and quite funny, you know, on the weekend, Bashir Abdi just broke 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he did that, Gary Lowe messaged me and said, we're going to miss you in Rotterdam. Mm-hmm. So because I paced Bashir the last two times. So it's just like, you get that sense of meeting people as well, and you get invited to all these races. So I do enjoy it. And I think the fitness gains I have got from those races is incredible.
Mm. And you are someone who is or seems to be very good at pacing. Like, you can actually stand the distance and go quite far. What kind of makes you, how come you enjoy it so much? Because you look like you're having fun out there.
I think it's because you're having to like look after the people behind you. So you're not thinking about how tired you are or anything. And it's almost, you have no pressure on yourself. Like, there is pressure to hit the split, but you're not trying to hit a time or anything like that. Like, in terms of run my own time, you're there to support others. And because when I was younger, I played football, rugby, whatever, I've always been part of a team environment. So being part of like that team role almost as a pacemaker it's just amazing. And I think in running, it needs to become more like bigger.
For sure, man. Like obviously after you ran at 2:11, I think a lot of people expected you to then go on and actually race a few marathons yourself. Obviously, you've still not done that since. Talk about that decision, because I think it's something that's quite, I guess, not controversial, but a few people thought you might, and then some were like, oh, no, he's going to wait a bit, like do a bit more track.
Well, you saw it over the summer, because I was training with you guys a few times, and I think I said to people, yes, I could have stood up straight to the marathon, but like you've seen Emil now, how quick he is over the shorter stuff. The guys in the Olympics, they can run 28 minutes for a 10K during a marathon, just go with the surge. And so I thought, my coach and I would say, there's no point just being another athlete at the race. I want to be competitive. And in order to be competitive, I need to be able to go with the surges and everything. Mm-hmm. So we thought just work on a summer just full of speed work, like shorter distances, shorter speed. And in the long run, it will help me.
Do you feel like you got as far as you could on the speed? Were you happy with, you know, where you ended up this summer? I think you were 13:30 something for 5K and, you know, 28, pretty much. Was it just inside 28 or 28 flat?
28:01. I missed the barrier. But in terms of my sessions, I've never run that fast in sessions. And I know my races didn't replicate. I got a bit unlucky with a couple of races in terms of like the weather, how many people were there. But a big thing I was like speaking to my coach about is at the end of the day, I will be a marathon runner. And these are just in times to enjoy it. And so I know I ran those times in training and I know my body's capable of doing it. So like I can just push that like into the future and hopefully it will pay off in the longer distances.
I think with you as well, what's quite interesting is you're probably not as like experienced on the track in these races. Is that fair to say? And like you kind of run a track 5K, 10K as if it is a road race where you're just kind of a bit gung-ho and you probably just need to hold back to really get that ultimate time. Is that fair?
Yeah, 100%. Like at the trials last year, I remember because it was Sam, Emil and Kripa at the front and I was like, oh, then there was a gap from like my group and I was like, oh, screw that. I'm just going to go with it. Like I didn't think about pacing or anything because it was a trial at the end of the day. And that's what I typically do on the road anyway. And that's how I like to race. And it paid off because I ran a really good time. But maybe if I had gone a bit slower, I could have broken 28 minutes. But at the end of the day, that's how I like to race.
For sure, man. I'm sure you'll kind of get those track times down in the future. And obviously, one kind of aspect for that, obviously, you signed for NN Running Team. When would that have been? Probably this time last year, maybe?
Yeah, start of 2021.
So when do you kind of first start hearing about it? Because I remember going up to the track just seeing you like the odd pair of orange arm sleeves and you were just like, oh, I just a bit of kit, mate, like keeping it on the low down. But like when did you kind of start thinking and getting in touch with those sort of people? Because obviously we've seen Mark Scott's done it recently, but you were kind of the first one on the British scene anyway.
So when I first paced Rotterdam, that's where I met Yuri, my agent, and before then he had been speaking to me. The guy who actually got us in touch was Kevin Quinn. So I still have to get him some kit or something. He keeps taking piss out of me. But it was actually, he called me on like a night out and he was pissed and stuff. So I didn't believe him at first. And he's like, oh, Jake, NN wants to speak to you. And I was like, yeah, like I could tell he was drunk, whatever. He's like, I know I'm drunk, but I promise I'm serious. So Kevin got me and Yuri in touch with each other. And so it started in like August and it takes quite a long time because NN likes to bring in athletes after the start of the year. So, because I knew for quite a while, it was a bit annoying because you just wanted to tell everyone almost. And then in January, I was able to let everyone know.
Mate, it was kind of big news. And what did it mean to be a part of NN, the biggest, you know, distance running organization? And did you feel a lot more pressure once you were signed with them, even, you know, even going to like low-key races?
Yeah, the pressure is up. Like even for when I did the Bristol 5K and all those, you know, the podium races and stuff. I turn up there and I'm like, okay, I know it's like a lot shorter for distance, but because I'm wearing the NN kit, you almost feel like you're obliged to do really well because you see the other athletes in the team doing so well and at an international stage, especially in the UK races, you want to really perform. And so there was a bit of pressure there, and I think that can impact athletes quite a lot because I like to, like I said, I like to run where there's no pressure, just run how I feel and stuff. So I felt like in some races recently, I've had that bit of pressure, but it does push you forward as well. So it's like a balance between like really pushing you and trying to bring you backwards.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make about like just being in the kit, because I know yourself, obviously you like getting out for domestic races, and they're probably some of the sorts of races where you'd see there's probably other people in the race wearing the kit that they bought online. They're in the real deal. And obviously, like you said, you're signed as a marathon runner, as a distance runner, but you're still happy to race over these 5K, 10K distances.
I loved it when I was part of your team. I absolutely loved it. That was good.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's great to see, Jake. And as I mentioned at the start, obviously you're open on social media, on Strava, about the training you're doing. Why is that? Kind of where does that come from? And do you feel like you owe it to kind of fans, I guess?
I think it's because like when I was younger and, you know, I was like, when I was looking into running, all I could really see was like Sweat Elite. Mm. And like no one was really publishing their training or anything like that. So I was like, I kind of want, because I was quite young and I wanted like 16, 17, and I just wanted to see what they were doing when they were younger, if they were playing other sports, and how I could develop into becoming like them. Because no one really published that much, I just felt like you said, like I owe it to the younger generation now, where I just want to let them know what I'm doing at my age now, and they can move on from that. Because I swear, when, like, I remember when I did my first half marathon, I was just following, you know, like the Core Running's half marathon plan. I just printed it off and like just followed that plan, because that was the only thing available at the time. Whereas now you could like almost just follow an elite athlete, just follow what their sessions are and do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I think so I feel like I just slightly owe it to the younger generation now.
Do you think that's a good thing to for people to do, to kind of follow what elites are doing?
Yes and no. Some of my sessions, no, because that's stupid. But I think it's just like the consistency. Like you see a lot of elite athletes, like you see all the Africans and that, or some of the Americans. So many times, most of the time, they're running easy. And a lot of these amateur runners, actually, they might make the mistake of going too hard too often. Mm-hmm. And so if they actually see a lot of these elite athletes going easy for the majority of the week, it will bring them backwards and they will end up running better times.
Talking of easy running, mate, like when you sign for NN, and one thing we want to talk about especially is that kind of camp in Uganda. Did your kind of perception of training change at all? Because you did obviously kind of get back from that and, you know, found a new coach and stuff like that. So what kind of changed from your perspective on like training and how to get faster?
I think one of the things I noticed was, well, I mean, you've seen what Chepsky's achieved now. Mm. And then there's another youngster called Rogers Kibet. So he's running like 27:08 now on 10K, and he's under 20 or something. And it was phenomenal watching him. And the one thing I really appreciated was, so one of the guys is called Victor. He won the Commonwealth Games marathon.
Right.
And the other guy, the other marathon runner there, they honestly, whenever they, like, there was an easy run in the afternoon, if they were slightly tired, they didn't go for it. They genuinely missed so many runs, and they've now run 2:04 and Commonwealth champion, because they were like, okay, my body's a little bit tired, I don't want to push it. Mm. And they made sure the hard days were hard and the easy days were like proper easy. I did find they took me on some stupid mountain runs. It was, I just don't know why they took like a Mzungo up there or something like that. And then another thing, on like a Saturday morning, they did like a downhill fartlek, so a minute on, minute off. But it was down, it was literally just down a mountain just to get your leg turnover working. So it's just working on that speed, almost speed development. And they literally walked the minute offs. And I didn't really appreciate how slow they did for the jogs, but they've achieved so much.
It's interesting, man. When you were there, did you sort of kind of really embrace that and do the same thing? Or did you find it difficult to kind of not do what you would do at home?
So the first week I was because I had to follow the plan. And the first week I was like, what the hell is going on? And I pushed the easy runs too hard, like, because I was just doing it like normal. And then I was like, okay, I really need to back off. These boys are literally jogging. And a team came from Djibouti as well to train with us. And they did the exact same mistake for the first 2 weeks. They just went too hard on the easy runs because that's what they're used to. And then they like knew what sessions we were doing. So we backed off on the easy runs. And by the time, like, third, fourth week, I was there for a bit too long. Like, I extend my stay for another 2 weeks, and I think I just killed my body. Whereas if I was there for the prescribed time, originally, I would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot, and I would love to, like, it's the most beautiful like country I've ever been to, and to just train with these guys is incredible.
Yeah, I think one thing which will surprise a lot of people is, like you said, their rogue training methods, but you know, they lead to incredible results. Like when, you know, I even remember seeing some of your Strava captions, and they would just, you would just climb a mountain for a morning run and stuff. So bonkers stuff.
Yeah, it was like, say I covered 90 to 100 miles a week. We were climbing, I think my biggest week was 10,000 foot of climb in just 1 week.
Wow.
And it was just, yeah, it's no roads or anything. You're just on trail and dirt the whole way.
And yeah, someone like Chep's got an incredible athlete over 5K. He would be doing this as well.
He did everything the same. And I've never, like, I've trained with a lot of athletes, but there were some sessions where I've never seen someone train like him before. It was disgusting, some of the stuff he was doing.
Can you give us an insight?
So you know where I did that 5K, 4K, 3K, 2K, 1K session? I did it on the road, and we ran. So we ran as a big group, and the first 5K was like 14:40. Mm-hmm. Then the 4K was like 11:20 or something. And then there was four of us who ran 3K in 8:24. It was me, the two marathon runners who've both broken the Uganda national record this year, and this other guy called Abel. We run at 8:24. He's pissed off and running 8:06. Wow. We then do the 2K, and he puts like 20 seconds on us. And then the last K, he puts 10 seconds on us. And my girlfriend was watching. She was more interested in just watching him than the rest of us. And he just goes. And it's almost like a flip of the switch. So the coach there would literally tell Chepsky when to push. So it'd almost be like, give him like a nod or something. And then if you saw that nod, you knew you were screwed. You just had to hang on for like 30, 40 meters more for dear life. But yeah, it was incredible. Jesus.
Yeah, talk to us about how it works with the coaching then with NN. Because obviously, at the time when you went on that camp, you were still coached by James C. But obviously, they have coaches for the camps, but they don't necessarily look after you all year round. How does it work there?
So with NN, so I was with James. And then when I go into Uganda, because he's not there, he spoke to the coach out there called Andy Ruta.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took me on. I just followed the program for the whole time. And then, so when you go on a camp, it's like, I think Mark might have done the same thing, because I was speaking to him recently. So when he went to Kenya, I presume he was training with like some of the group there, or he got an indication of what he had to do from one of the coaches, because it does help when the coach is there, they can see how you're doing and everything. And then when I came back, I moved to Gavin and Joe Pavey, and I'm quite lucky because Joe used to work very closely with Global, I presume, and Yuri, so my agent. So my agent and those two know each other very, very well. And it's worked really well because we've made like quite a good team. And so like if they have any queries, they talk to each other. So in terms of races, Yuri and Gavin will literally decide what races they want me to do, what's best for me. And it's absolutely incredible.
Right. I just want to just go back to Uganda a little bit and just talk about that recovery process. You know, you said you were out there a few weeks too long. You know, what was the impact of kind of overtraining, and how long do you think it took you to kind of get back to feeling normal, or what you thought was normal again?
I think this is where my like the red S I suffered from started. So in Uganda, I didn't realize, but I did have like, I was speaking to Pippa Wolven, so who's head of Red S, and she basically said I have the physical symptoms of Red S, but eating disorder, like mental eating disorder. So when I was out in Uganda, that's when I first noticed. I was like, oh crap, like I think I'm like suffering quite a bit. It actually, I think it started right before, you know, when I pulled out of the British 10k trials. Stupidly, this was when I did the marathon 5k PB. Stupidly, I like looked at myself in a photo, and I thought, as stupid as I thought, I was like, I think I'm too heavy. Even though I've never run those fast times, I did something, a stupid session a week out from the 10K. That's why I pulled out. And from there, I just went into a bit of a bad state almost with my eating, didn't really realize. So I kept losing weight. And then in Uganda, I lost an absolute ton of weight. And I think you can get away with it for the first few weeks, but then your body just shuts down. And I remember the last week I was there. So the first 3-4 weeks were okay, but then because it like over time, it just hits you. Wasn't sleeping well, was barely recovering well. And then on the Friday, we did one session and I could barely keep up. And that that morning, I went back to camp and got basically got a flight the next day. But I just called and said, I can't do this anymore because I put my body into such a bad way. But like people might, of course, it's like my fault and stuff. But I think because I was suffering from this illness, essentially, I just wasn't wasn't helping myself. So it really started in Uganda. And then from there, I've struggled with it for almost a year now. And just, I think the last year has been quite tough in terms of, I've never been injured, had so many illnesses. And so it's quite nice that I've opened up about it because now I know what the problem is.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it tough being in that environment as well where, you know, these athletes, I just think naturally they eat, you know, very little. And it's tough being a Westerner kind of, you know, looking at them because, you know, they can eat little and get away with it.
Yeah, like I had a chat with my parents about this because they literally said to me when, like, the Africans have, like, a symptoms of red S as well. Like, because, like, they do, they all they eat is ugali. They don't have much varied diet in their diet. They don't eat much else. But I think it's because maybe they're so used to eating, like, they're so used to eating little, but they're so used to eating these, like, different foods. They can get away with it almost. And whereas, like, us, when we go to somewhere new, it can be quite tough for us. It might be the same if they came to Europe and spent a month there, they might not be able to cope as well because they're not used to their customs. So it's just trying to get used to the customs. But yeah, so I struggled from that. And now I've realized how much it did impact me.
Yeah, for sure. Like obviously after that Uganda trip, like I think you took some time off, but then kind of came back out racing and running well. Like you said, like you trained a bit with us. I saw you training really well. Like you had some good racing in the summer. Did you sort of put behind you kind of those early thoughts that you had and think, oh, you were fine again?
Yes. So I gave my body a bit of a break. And again, I think I went through the same process. So gave my body a bit of a break and my body can like last a few months, whatever. But then it will break again. And I think I put it behind me because I was like, I was so invested in getting this running quick over the 10K. I only had 8 weeks after I had my break. And I was like, okay, I can do this. So I was just pushing my body, not thinking about the health factors, not thinking about my food or anything, just trying to run as hard as I could. I ran a quick time, but then, yes, it does pay off for the first few months. But like I said, after 8-9 months, I got a stress fracture. So it does help in the early days, but it doesn't over a long term, it doesn't help at all.
Thing is, you though, you were able to kind of, like you said, get these stress fractures, but take these injuries, you know, on the chin, and you would just go to the cross trainer and train like a beast on there. Do you think in hindsight, it would have been worth just having a little bit of downtime before you started kind of cross training?
Yeah, oh, 100%. So that's why I've kind of put into now. So I'm having 3 weeks completely off. And I've just done some blood tests, blood as well. So I'm speaking to this woman called Renee McGregor, this nutritionist and also psychologist. And I was speaking to Renee, and depending on my blood results, I might still have to have a few more days off depending on what my testosterone score is. Because in Uganda, I will tell you this because people should find out anyway, but when I was out in Uganda and did my blood results after, I did a blood test and my testosterone was so low. The people I've been talking to now wouldn't have let me train at all. So basically the minimum level you're supposed to be is above 10. And my testosterone was a score of 4, which was basically, they said most women are higher than you. So I was basically in the women's range. And so I said, so basically all of last summer, I was training, competing with a testosterone disgustingly low. And they were like, probably, like, you are probably doing that. So I thought, okay, how the hell is my body being able to do this, whatever? But now it's just a fact of getting those up and using all these bloods for my advantage. So it's just, so I didn't realize how bad my body was last year.
Jake, you're obviously someone who's got like a massive team of like coaches, sponsors, support around you. And I think what kind of your story really highlights is that it can happen to someone, even though you've got that support framework. And you probably from the outside, maybe looking in, people might think, oh, well, if you've got all the testing in the world, then you'd always recognize it happening. But kind of your story kind of explains that unless you're actually looking for it specifically, might not happen.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, I was a big, like, I weighed myself way too often. And, you know, you want to be like almost lighter. It's like in a session, you want to get quicker, you want to be lighter. And I just fell into that routine and it just affected me. And like affecting what I ate the night before, because I wouldn't eat as much or something. And then I just fell into a really bad trap. So now, like, I'm weighing myself in ages, which is a very good thing. And speaking to a lot of people, and I'm really happy with telling people about, like, suffering from it, because I didn't realize, but do you know Rowan Preece, who used
to have... of course, yeah.
He came out with it in 2018, and he's been messaging me quite a lot about it. And he said since he told people he was suffering from it, I'm like the only male. So me and him want to kind of work with Pippa and trying to like make this whole idea a bit bigger, so people, well, male athletes don't suffer from it as well. Because I know there are a lot of athletes out there who don't want to open up, which is fair enough, but they almost should as well.
Definitely, man. I mean, did anyone ever tell you or ask questions? And is this, I guess, one of the difficulties living alone at a relatively young age? You kind of do quite rash things, don't you? Like, for example, you know, skipping meals and stuff, just to, you know, was anyone on the outside ever kind of like, you know, pre-warning you, checking in on you? Or
yeah, so I had like all my mates, so Kieran, James Henning and stuff, and they were all like worried about me. And then it really kicked in December when they, like, I almost had a few days off after. So I did, you know, I did that whole block of cross training. Another thing, like, I was basically losing weight just doing cross training with a stress fracture. And I was like, what am I doing? Mm. And I had a few days off. And it was like one of the last days in December before we went home for Christmas holidays. And they all just almost like, they messaged me, spoke to me and said, Jake, they're like, you really need to look at this. Like, you're not almost looking good. You're losing weight and everything. And I was like, okay, I really need to sort this out because this isn't fair. Mm. And the worst probably thing is with it as well is because you're almost focused on what you want, what your next meal is, and you're skipping meals, your mental state just becomes like, I was horrible to my parents, my girlfriend on this trip without trying to mean, like, without meaning to be, because I think it was just that hunger. And I was just like, so exposed to just waiting for the next meal. I didn't really care about anything else. So I had to like apologize quite a bit, but like, it's that, it just changes you mentally, which is horrible as well.
Yeah. What would you like, what sort of advice would you give to anyone kind of in similar situations who maybe even if they're not sure like what it is, but maybe just have kind of the inklings, like what would your advice be to them?
I think it's like, speak out, even if it's speak to people you trust at first. Mm. And I think if you think you're suffering, or I think the first thing that came to me is when I was like, yes, you look forward to food, but I was every day just waiting for breakfast, waiting for dinner, whatever, like just wait, didn't want to do anything else, train and just waiting, just talking about food the whole time. And that's when like people started to gather, okay, there is something wrong because he shouldn't just be talking about food the whole time. But for those people, it's just speak to your parents, speak to your family, like they can support you so much. And for those people, like, it might be horrible as well because my parents, they've been so supportive, but at first they almost like want it, like they're just telling you to eat, but it can be quite hard for people who are suffering from this because at the end of the day they don't want to eat too much. And that can cause like quite a bad relationship. But honestly, just talk to people. There's more information about it all as well, and there's actually a load of people out there who can support you further. So for example, Pippa Wolf and I went towards her because I was like, I know she suffered from it and everything, and she's helped me so much. So it's just, my main advice is just as soon as you feel like you're going through quite a bad phase, just open up to someone, just one person, even if it isn't the whole story, just say a few things, a few words to that one person and just get that little support.
Yeah. What do you think the recovery like period is looking like now? Like you said, you've had a few weeks completely off now. And will you, you know, when you get back from this, will you start to be a bit more selfish and kind of target your own goals as opposed to like pacing and stuff? Will you look to kind of open up and nail that marathon as well?
Oh, yeah. So like, I think the big influence was that Emile's race. So I was like, okay, screw this. Like, I need to get back out there. Like, I want to compete against him. So it was absolutely phenomenal. And it's all these performances which are motivating me. So I'm now thinking about my health first, because if I can get my health up and get all my blood results up and everything, I know I will run really quick times. So like last year, like I said, my testosterone was so low, but I was still banging out those sessions, running those quick times. If I can get my health to like the best level it can be, I feel like I can run really quick. And then, so it's like 3 weeks completely off now, and then I'll start on Monday, just do some like cross training, whatever. I'm quite lucky because the physio around here has an Alter G treadmill. So like I can like take off 50% body weight, and that will start the run process a bit earlier than normal. Cause I don't like you guys, like I've done that run walk program. It's not fun at all, where you do like a minute on minute walk. Whereas if I start a bit early on that Alter tree, when I start running again, I won't have to, I can almost skip that phase a little bit and just go to like, say a 10 minute run or like a 15 minute run. So it's working with the physios down here, working with the nutritionist, psychologist, getting bloods. And like you said, yeah, I'm going to be focused on me for the year, because I would love to go to the Olympics next year or the World Champs next year, but I just want to get fit and healthy this year and then target something in the fall.
What's great to hear, Jake, is that you still seem like really positive about the sport in general, because I think it would be quite, not, I don't think anyone would blame you if you sort of had like fell out of love with the sport because of it.
No, I think it's like, because I'm being back here. So because I joined Axe Valley Runners, I've been coaching all the like the oldies like every Wednesday and Thursday. They're just going out in the pissing rain, just like taking some sessions. And the first week when I said to people, like when I was at, because I had to get an MRI in Wimslow 3 weeks ago, and I literally said to my girlfriend, like, I hit rock bottom that day. Like, I told no one I was there for an MRI. No one knew or anything. And then when I got told I had a stress fracture after just coming back from one, I knew something was up. And then when I spoke to people about how long it's going to take to get back into a healthy state, that's when I was like, oh, screw this. So the first few days, I was like almost couldn't be bothered and stuff. And then when I got the support from the running community, is absolutely incredible. And like with that, it's just motivated me more. And I think it's like you guys, you say you want to stop, and then after a week or two, you're like, nah, screw that, I want to get back to it. So yeah. So we'll start on Monday.
Right. Those stress fractures, was there a particular reason they came, or was it just kind of out the blue? They were just, you know, you'd wake up one morning and, you know, try doing some exercise and they would just, you know, be there.
So the first one, my foot one, because it was so annoying, because I was like 2-3 weeks out from Valencia, and because I just did big half, like I've said to people, no tape or anything, and I was feeling unreal in incredible shape. That was the most annoying thing, because I missed Valencia and it was a good opportunity to run quick. But when I remember I was running around and someone was on the bike with me, and it's 7K, it just almost, I didn't hear a crunch or anything, but you know when you feel like you're like a toe's quite tight or something, like my foot felt tight. And I took off my shoe because I thought at first there was something in. And then I put another step down. I was like, I can't do this. I don't know what the hell is going on. And yeah, that was painful. And then the second time with my back, it was really weird because I was just, again, running along on a Monday. And I got back and I was like, oh, my back's quite tight. And then the next day I did like this massive track session with like Jamie Dominey and stuff in Salisbury. And I was running like incredible times. I think my coach was he's like, you're too fit at the minute, and because it's from all the cross training. But then the next day, the most annoying thing is I went to a chiropractor the next day on the Wednesday and asked, okay, can you just check my back? And he said, oh, it's nothing, it's just tightness and everything, you can try running a couple of days. I then speak to a physio on the front, and then I try run on the Saturday and I'm in so much pain, and that's already been 3-4 days. 2 days later I have a stress fracture. So I'm a bit like annoyed how a chiropractor didn't like test it or anything. Or I know it is in quite a hard place, but there are a few tests you can do to see if it is a stress fracture. And I'm a little bit annoyed he almost didn't try it, because I even told him that my DEXA scan showed that I have low bone density scores. So you would think, because they specialize in backs and lower backs, they would think about doing those checks. So I almost went 5 days with his stress fracture, not knowing, just walking around and everything. And I remember on the Sunday as well, I was walking around Birmingham and I had to sit down in the ball, you know, that ball center.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to sit down every 2 minutes just on the floor because I was in that much pain and I couldn't, I just physically couldn't move. So I think the most annoying thing is that the chiropractor couldn't like assess me or anything.
Hey, one thing that, you know, I'm picking up from all this is the organization and the umbrella you are with NN and, you know, the perks you get, I'm presuming that, you know, these kind of chiropractors and physios and nutritionists you're speaking to are through NN. And for someone like yourself, how important is that? Because, you know, you're not funded by British Athletics or anything. And a lot of other people out there, your level will just be attached to a brand, but that brand won't offer them anything else bar the sponsorship, you know, but you, it is like a governing body, the way NN treat their athletes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. So when I had my blood test last time, like they've sent me to Netherlands just to have a blood test before. Like I went to Netherlands for like 2 days just to do a blood test. And again, the agent, they helped me write the post on Instagram. They've helped me get involved with the nutritionists and psychologists. So all the people on my side now are now going to work with my NN agent. And I think I'm also potentially going up to Loughborough because there's, I forgot his name, but there's like a S&C coach up there who specializes in bone density and bone health.
Right.
I have a feeling Jake Whiteman was seeing someone from Loughborough like just recently with his injury, an S&C coach. And I have a feeling it might be someone linked with him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I feel like my team's getting quite big. And I keep saying to my family, if I can't get through this with a team, I've screwed up somehow.
Yeah, no, it's good to hear that you've got sort of the things in place to sort it out, because obviously we hope to see you kind of first of all back healthy, but then obviously racing again soon. Are we going to see, like, you're going to be documenting it all on Strava and Instagram as per?
I've actually been told off quite a lot on Strava. I'm going to put out some like cheeky little, if it's a big session or something, I'll put that out. We'll see if I can put more Strava, but thing is, because I do completely see, because it does put a lot of pressure on yourself, and I do love the aspect of Strava, but I don't know whether you guys get this, but on some easy runs I did push a little bit harder because you wanted to look good on Strava, something so stupid like that, and I have fallen for it. So I've like come off it a bit, and I think when I get into like a good mental headspace, I will start putting some more thought on. And I completely understand why my agent and coach don't want me, because they don't want me to almost go, like, for example, right now, if I went 3 weeks again, started running and then got another injury, people would be like questioning how they're doing. So it's just getting into a healthy state. And then I'm going to push for Strava because I do love it.
it's good to hear that. And yeah, sounds like a good idea to me, but obviously we want to see you enjoying it, mate.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to coming back. It's probably the best time to come back because it's starting to get a bit warmer. So that's the only good thing about these stress fractures. I've missed the crappy weather. So that's the only positive thing.
Good man. For sure. Right, look, great. Jake, it's been great to chat with you today. And thanks so much. And then for anyone listening, if you want to kind of see more of Jake's story, we did speak to him, as we said at the beginning, like a couple of years ago. So make sure you check that episode out. I'll pop a link for that in the description because I can't remember off the top of my head what episode it was.